Now, from Mayo Clinic, it's Medical Edge Weekend, the only show that gives you the chance to ask your questions to Mayo Clinic experts. Plus, we'll take you beyond the headlines for in-depth discussions of what developments in medicine mean to you. Information you want from specialists who know. Join the conversation by phone, through our blog, or on Twitter by going to radio.mayoclinic.org. Now, with this week's program, here are your hosts, Dr. Tom Shives and Tracy McCray.
From the Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota campus, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McCray.
Welcome, everyone, to Medical Edge Weekend. Well, Tracy, this week on Medical Edge Weekend, we're going to talk big business.
Oh, we are? Okay.
It's a business show. To the tune of $300 billion a year. Now, that's how much Americans spend on prescription drugs every year. That's how much they spent in 2010, and that was a little bit more than they spent in 2009. And, you know, that's the result of the fact that physicians in this country doled out some 4 billion prescriptions. And if you count the prescriptions that nobody got filled, which is about 20%, it's close to 5 billion prescriptions that physicians in this country wrote just last year. It's big money. It's big business. And in fact, prescriptions account for about 10% of the healthcare dollar.
Well, today on Medical Edge Weekend, we're going to talk with two Mayo pharmacists, Dr. Amy Cipolla and Dr. Chris Settlemeyer. We'll talk about the most prescribed drugs in the U.S. in 2010. We'll talk about generic drugs, big news on that front a few weeks ago, and why they are as good as brand names and why they're cheaper and how much cheaper. We'll also talk about a really interesting and important program called medication therapy management. It's the new thing in the world of pharmacy.
And I think
why.
If people are taking more than one or two or three medications, they certainly ought to take advantage of this program.
Absolutely. And so we'll talk more about that. We'll also talk about noncompliance, why so many people stop taking their medications. We'll give you tips on what you should know and what you should ask when you get your prescription filled, plus why antibiotics won't help get rid of the cold. But you know what, Tom? It is the most wonderful time of the year, isn't it?
Well, it is for most of us. But unfortunately, for some people, it's not at all. For the holidays, for this certain group of people, they can be hectic, demanding, financially draining. As a parent, you know that. And they can be stressful. The best of times for some people, but unfortunately the worst of times for others. Well, joining us by telephone is Mayo psychiatrist Dr. Terry Rummins. Dr. Rummins, good to have you with us. Thanks for joining the program.
Well, good morning. It's good to be with you.
I know that you know that for some people this is not the best time of the year. There truly is such a thing as the holiday blues, isn't there?
There really is. You know, just as you've already said, the holiday season can really be a time of joy and fun for many, but for some, it's a time of loneliness, reflections on past failures, and oftentimes, unfortunately, stressful interpersonal relationships.
Is it because, like we, you know, it's supposed to be this wonderful time, and that song is on the radio, it's the most wonderful time, and everybody's telling you, be jolly, you know, all of these things, and if you're not feeling it, it's even more pressure that maybe something's wrong with you and you should be feeling it.
That's a good point.
Well, how do you know if you're just feeling overwhelmed by your list of things to do or if you actually have the holiday blues?
Then you might need some help.
Yes. How do you know the difference? What are the symptoms?
Well, there is a difference between the holiday blues or holiday depression and then really a serious depression that you should seek help for. I think the former occurs just around the holiday season only, as it's approaching, and then it subsides as the holidays pass. But with more serious depression, where help really should be sought, it lasts more than 2 weeks. It's quite intense. And clearly, if ever anyone gets to the point that they feel like their life is not worth living anymore, then it's gone beyond just something that's a holiday blues. In fact, the National Institute of Mental Health say 5 to 10% of individuals will have a serious depression. So this needs to be watched for.
And this is something that if they seek your help, you do have help.
Absolutely. You know, some of the symptoms that do overlap with the more serious depression, but they are transient for holiday blues, can be anything from sadness and anxiety. But one of the bigger symptoms oftentimes is irritability that people don't recognize as really part of the holiday blues. And then withdrawing from others and just not interested in things that they used to be, sleeping poorly, appetite changing either up or down, and then really just feeling bad about themselves. And often aggravation of physical symptoms, especially pain, increasing headaches, and just generally not feeling well.
How often is there a special circumstance? For instance, the year that my dad died, that Christmas was really hard. And, you know, you'll hear those first things that come along after someone is gone are special circumstances. Does that happen for people?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are many causes for the holiday blues, and as you're already alluding to, some of them are psychological. It can be the first season after you've lost a loved one, whether it's by death or whether it's separation, for divorce. That can be the case. It can be experiences from past holidays that were not very pleasant. You know, it can be just being alone or being isolated. You know, family dynamics often play into the holiday blues when they aren't always the best. And then unrealistic expectations. People, you know, hearing things on the TV and the radio that just make the holidays sound like they're wonderful, and then they just don't live up to your expectations.
Okay, so the last one that you listed off, I think that's a key one, the unrealistic expectations that people put themselves through that all year long. What are some things that people can do just for that one alone?
Well, I think that the first thing you have to do is really set realistic goals. I mean, what is realistic given your circumstances and your situation? And then you need, once you've done that, it's really setting limits on what you are and aren't going to do, and then pace yourself throughout that time period.
So the holiday blues are real, and if people have some of the symptoms that we've talked about, there is help, and there's help with your department or a psychologist or their minister. It's important to seek help if you're having the holiday blues, right?
Absolutely. Well, especially if it goes into more serious depression, yes. I think for just the holiday blues, oftentimes people can do things, getting out, being with others if they're lonely, or if they're feeling overwhelmed, setting time each day to just be by themselves and just kind of reflect, or minimizing interactions with people that make you more irritable or upset. Those are some of the things folks can do before they have to go see a mental health care provider. But if it becomes more serious, absolutely seek help, even from your primary care physician.
I think it's interesting that you just said there's a little, take a part of the day to actually just let yourself feel blue, to just let that be, that's okay. I think that's hard for people to do too.
I think that's probably very true in our busy lives.
Dr. Terry Rummins, thanks so much for being with us, and happy holidays.
Same to you. Thank you. Bye now. Okay.
So Dr. Amy Cipolla and Dr. Chris Settle-Meyer, good to have you with us. These are doctors of pharmacy, not just pharmacists. It's the heavyweights, I keep telling you, that
I'm
are on
surrounded.
This
I'm surrounded.
That's right. Thanks so much for being with us. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
And you're here partly because this is a big business, prescription treatment in the United States. Nearly half of all Americans are taking a prescription drug, and there's a significant percentage of the population, 10% or so, who are taking five or more prescription drugs. 4 billion prescriptions last year, and at a cost of $307 billion. But I think you mentioned before the program that the number of prescriptions and the cost is actually not rising as fast as other portions of medical care, right?
You're exactly right. In the last couple years, the prescription cost has actually slowed down a little bit. Since 2001, prescription drugs had gone up $135 billion. But last year, there was a $7 billion increase. So it is slowing down a little bit.
$7 billion increase in 1 year.
Yeah.
And that's slowing down.
Yeah.
And is this partly because of generics?
It is. So part of it's explained by the new generics, patent expirations, and less demand for the new drug therapies.
Yeah. So explain that to our listeners, the patent expiration. Once someone invents a drug, they only have a certain period of time upon which they have exclusivity and can sell it alone. And
that's correct.
Yeah. Nobody else can sell it, right?
That is correct. Now, when a drug comes to market, typically there's a 20-year patent, or there's a protection for 20 years. And now when that point, that's all the way from marketing to research till it comes to market. Typically, by the time that is available to the public, there's about 7 years left. So then there's almost a 7 years where this brand name only medications out there can be anything. It can be very expensive, and it can even be cheaper.
So what the drug company is trying to do really is recoup the costs of research and development, right?
That is correct.
They're not necessarily trying to rip off the public, although sometimes they make a lot of money on some of these drugs, but they do spend a lot of money on researching new drugs, right?
That definitely is true. With the especially with the new brand name medications out there, the bulk of the money, the bulk of that health, that prescription dollar is for research and development. The generic companies, when they're able to come out, they don't have to worry about all that research and development. All they have to do is just make that medication. So that's why when they hit that generic market, they can drop down in price from 30 to even 80%.
So when a drug goes off patent, the company that made it has to release the formula. So then anybody can get these chemicals and put them together and make the drug.
Yeah, what happens when they first go off patent, there's about a six-month, one company has a six-month exclusive right to that medication. So when a drug first goes generic, you have one company making that. After that time expires, then it's kind of the floodgates can be open. Anyone can make that. And they can be approved as long as, of course, they act the same, they work in our body the same, they have the same main ingredient inside that.
Give us an example of Lipitor. Came off patent, didn't it? And that is a cholesterol-lowering medication, and it is a huge seller, isn't it? Doesn't it generate more dollars for the healthcare industry than any other drug?
Yes. Last year, it was the number one selling medication.
Okay. So it used to cost how much a pill, and now that it's generic, it'll cost how much a pill?
It was, I heard this dollar amount. I mean, it's dramatically different. That's why the company that owns Lipitor is trying everything they can to keep people saying, remain loyal to Lipitor. Don't go with those generics. Because that's a huge price difference, right, Dr. Settlemyer?
Yeah, and right now, typically the national average for 30 tablets is about $160. Now, since it went generic, since it's in this kind of honeymoon period of this generic phase, it's not that much cheaper. I mean, it's like more on the 30% cheaper phase, but you give this about five more months here and it can come down dramatically from that point
on. It will plummet. So we'll go from $130 for a month's supply, $130?
$160.
$160. And it'll go down to what, 20?
Well, as 25? Far as it goes, take an example for Zocor, used to be our top medication for cholesterol, went from $174 for 30 tablets. Now you can get it on national average for about $28 for 30 days.
So that's huge.
Yeah.
And then the next question is, are the generics safe? Are they as good as the brand name?
And as far as that goes, the generic medications, they have to, kind of like I was alluding to earlier, they have to have the same active ingredient. They have to dissolve in the body the same way, or else the FDA says, no, you do not meet the criteria.
Well, our guests are pharmacist Dr. Amy Cipolla and Dr. Chris Settlemyer. It's time for a short break. Coming up, our Myth or Matter of Fact is going to address this topic we're just talking about. Myth or Matter of Fact, generic drugs cost less because they're inferior to brand name drugs. Myth or Matter of Fact, we'll get the answer coming up. And right after the news at the bottom of the hour, we'll take your questions for our Mayo pharmacist at 507-282-1234 or contact us by going to our website at radio.mayoclinic.org. Also, tweet us at hashtag Mayo Radio. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. I'm Dr. Tom Shives, along with co-host Tracy McCray, and our guests this week are both pharmacists from the Mayo Clinic, Dr. Amy Cipolla and Dr. Chris Settlemyer. Time for Myth or Matter of Fact. And let's do that one you just mentioned.
All right.
And did you check the tweets? How many people?
I didn't.
Yeah.
I forgot to check and see what the Facebook chatter is, because if you are fans of Mayo Clinic on Facebook, you can follow along and vote on these.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Myth or Matter of Fact. Generic drugs cost less because they're inferior to brand name drugs. Dr. Settlemyer?
Well, as far as this goes, it's a myth.
Okay.
Because with this, they have to become a generic drug, it has to go through the same, has to be regulated by the FDA, and they have to say it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be something different.
All right. Well, that's good to know, isn't it?
Yeah, it
makes because you wonder, how come I was paying $15 a pill for this, and now I pay $1.50, and don't you wonder?
Yeah.
But they are closely regulated, and in your mind, generics are safe.
That is true.
They are equivalent.
Yes, sir.
Now, when the doctor writes a prescription, do I have to have the doctor write the prescription for the generic version, or can I get to work with you at the pharmacy counter and say, is there any generics that are available? How does that work?
As far as the Minnesota law goes, or as far as state law goes, in most states, if the generic is available, we will dispense that medication unless the doctor says, no, I want them to have the brand only,
Okay. Or
if the patient does too.
And then why would that happen? I mean, why would the doctor or the patient say, I want them to have the brand name, even though it's 10 times more expensive?
Some of the things that we see sometimes deals with dyes or inactive ingredients, we know that this medication is a brand name, we know all what's in it. It doesn't have anything that, like maybe a red dye or something like that you'd be allergic to. And so we know for sure that if we have an ingredient list in front of us, we have to, we can use the brand name only because it's a safe one. Otherwise, there's some medications that are very, they call a narrow therapeutic margin, like things for sometimes for people who have like seizures or other disorders, where if we change the medication, even though it is the same by the FDA, it can still change the blood levels because we have different inactive ingredients inside it.
Wow. Good to know.
That's interesting. Yep.
And so that's when the doctor will say, do not swap this for a generic.
That is correct.
Gotcha. All right. Myth or matter of fact, Dr. Cipolla, prescription drugs are safer to abuse than other illicit substances?
Great question. And this is definitely a myth as well. As we've seen in the news quite often lately, prescription drugs can have the same result. They're very dangerous, can have a lot of complications, side effects, can result in death ultimately.
Sure. And just last week we were talking about how important even Tylenol or Advil, I mean, that's over the counter. And can you guys tell me, since I've got both of you here, how is it that one adult dose is the same for Advil as a person who weighs 150 pounds more than me? It doesn't make any sense. Children's medication is by weight, but adults is just adults take two. What? How does that work out? Any idea? It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and they always give you a range. So especially, you know, if you're a smaller person or you feel like medications affect you a little more, you could start on the lower side of the range. It's a suggested dosing. So, you know, 1 to 2 tablets every 4 to 6 hours, you could instead take one.
I just suffer.
You take as many as it takes to get your
No, but that's the problem. Yeah. That is the problem with something like Advil, though, because there are bad side effects that result from too much Advil.
Absolutely. And that's why it's important to look at your packages, too, and read the directions and make sure you're not taking any more than they recommend, too.
All right. Dr. Sattelmeyer, another myth or matter of fact for you that kind of is along the same lines. Teens often get prescription medications on the street.
You know, that's kind of one of those questions that they can, because like I said, the prescription medication, the prescription drug world here is just as hotly contested as some illicit drugs out there. You know, you can have friends at colleges, you know, giving out medications, selling medications to their friends because for whatever.
Or stealing, would say it could be too.
Yeah. So as far as it goes, I mean, saying that question, it's, you know, it's neither here nor there because they sure can get it off the street, but a lot of times they're going to their own medicine cabinet in their home.
Okay. Right. Now, and that brings up the fact that the number one prescribed drug last year was Vicodin, which is a combination of oxycodone and acetaminophen, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And why so many prescriptions? I mean, do you think what happens is the doctors often overprescribe and they have a lot left over and then they just sit in the medicine cabinet and the kids take them? Is that what happens?
That definitely could be. I mean, a lot of people do come in with pain, and it is a commonly prescribed low-cost medication. And a lot of people, their pain will improve, and they'll still have some left. So then it comes to a situation where you have to figure out how to get rid of it, like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, so if you're a parent, and your pain's gone, and you've still got 10 Vicodin tablets in the cabinet, you need to get rid of them.
Absolutely.
And how do you get rid of them?
So you can look for a drug take-back day in your area.
That's becoming more and more popular.
That's
like the new thing in pharmacy, isn't it? Yeah. What do
like
I do
when
with
you
these
turn
drugs?
In your guns.
Yeah, what? Yeah. When I'm done with these, I don't need anymore. What am I supposed to do with them? I can't flush them. I can't throw them. What do I do?
Absolutely. So you can take them back. You give them. Usually there's pharmacists there that take them, and then the DEA takes them and destroys the medications. Or if you're at home, you can talk with your local waste department about how they would prefer you destroy your medications. Or they recommend mixing them with something undesirable. So taking the pills and mixing them with coffee grounds or kitty litter, adding some water to them.
And then seal it back up.
Yeah, yep. Putting them in a container that's sealed and just throw them in your trash. You want to take off any information that would identify what it is or your personal medical information. But once it's sealed and with something undesirable, you can throw it in your trash and that's just fine.
But you don't flush it or yeah, send
not?
It on the
why,
drain
why
anymore
don't
like
you
used
flush
to.
Them?
Right. So they do have concerns about drinking water, so they don't recommend flushing your medications unless there's no better alternative.
Think All right. about it. Get your kitty grounds and your coffee, kitty litter and coffee grounds ready. All right, let's go north of the border for a moment here, Dr. Cipolla. It's risky buying prescription drugs from Canada or any online pharmacy for that matter. Is that a myth or matter of fact?
That is a matter of fact.
Okay.
So we definitely do not recommend buying your drugs in Canada.
What are the Canadians doing that we don't want any part of? I don't understand.
Well, the number one thing I would consider is that for drugs that are available here in the U.S., it's actually illegal to import drugs across the border.
Okay.
So that's one thing to consider. The other thing is that, you know, those drugs may not be exactly equivalent. So
the regulation for the drugs in Canada is not the same as it is here.
Well, they're not regulated by the FDA. So, you know, you just don't. You don't know exactly what you're getting.
You don't trust the Canadians, is what you're saying.
I trust the Canadians.
Much too nice to say something like that. But it was true that a few years ago, there was busloads of people getting all across the northern parts of the United States that were taking chartered buses up to Canada to fill prescriptions.
And the other thing to consider is anything that's taking away that interaction between your doctor and your pharmacist and that, you know, group of people who are kind of looking out for you and knowing what you're on is probably not good and can lead to definitely some troubles.
Well, what about purchasing prescription drugs from other countries? Is that illegal?
It is.
It is.
Well, if you're going to take them back with you.
Oh.
So if they're not available here in the U.S. Yeah.
All right,
even
so
if you just keep them for your own personal use,
yes,
still illegal.
Yeah.
Oh, all of those renegade lawbreakers.
That's right. So you don't want to go up to Canada and pick up your Marlboros and your drugs and get a tank of gas. You got to get it right here.
Stay here.
You're listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Our guests are Mayo pharmacist Dr. Amy Cipolla and Dr. Chris Settlemyer. Coming up, this week's Health and Medical News with Vivian Williams. And right after that, we'll be taking your phone calls. 507-282-1234 is our telephone number. You can go to our website and leave your comment or your question, or you can tweet us at @MayoRadio. This is Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend.
Medical Edge Weekend is pre-recorded. To join in, go to radio.mayoclinic.org. You'll find links to next week's episode, upcoming programs, and how to listen live. Have a question? Leave us a note in the comments section or tweet us at #MayoRadio. Hi, I'm Vivian Williams with a look at health and medical news. Losing weight and keeping it off. Easier said than done, right? Well, a National Institutes of Health study shows obese adults who received weight loss coaching on the phone, through the web, and email contact, as well as support from their primary care providers, often lost weight, about 5% of their body weight, and kept it off for 2 years. In a related study, researchers found that counseling sessions combined with the option to use weight loss medication or meal replacements such as liquid shakes or meal bars helped about one-third of obese participants lose a significant amount of weight and keep it off for 2 years. Now, both studies were part of the Practice-Based Opportunities for Weight Reduction, or POWER trials, funded by the NIH. These trials sought to find effective weight loss treatments that can be used in primary care practices to help obese patients. And it seems phone, web, email, and coaching sessions and other types of support make a difference in losing weight. And these studies were published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Now, when fall colors fade and winter rolls in, there's a good chance you've sometimes felt sluggish, moody, and maybe stuck in a funk. Those symptoms are typical of seasonal affective disorder, or SAD, a type of depression that typically occurs during the winter months. Symptoms include sleeping too much, overeating, loss of energy, social withdrawal, and difficulty concentrating. Mayo Clinic psychiatrist Dr. Robert Auger says you should get professional help if your symptoms begin to affect your ability to perform at work or begin to take a toll on your personal relationship. It's especially important to get help if you begin to feel hopeless, think about suicide, or find yourself turning to alcohol for comfort or relaxation.
Seasonal affective disorder is a type of clinical depression that recurs during specific parts of the year. The type of seasonal affective disorder that most of us are familiar with is that occurs during winter months, typically after daylight savings, when the amount of light that's available to us during the day shortens.
And here are some tips that might help. Get outside. There's no substitute for natural light. Light therapy boxes can help boost your mood when you're unable to get outside. Get regular exercise and stay social.
Okay, are you stumped about what to get people for the holidays? Well, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has a suggestion. How about the gift of good health from the National Million Hearts Initiative? In a little twist on online postcards called e-cards, the National Million Hearts Initiative is asking gift givers to consider taking care of their own health as a gift to a loved one. The digital postcard is available free on the internet as well as Facebook and Twitter at millionhearts.hhs.gov. And that's a look at health and medical news. I'm Vivian Williams.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Dr. Tom and Tracy and pharmacist Dr. Amy Cipolla and Dr. Chris Settlemeyer. Information you want from people you trust. And I see the phone lines are full. The tweets are coming in faster.
Lit up like a Christmas tree.
Faster than we can read them. But I have one question before I turn it over to those. The people who are going to join our program. And that is, why does it take so long to get my prescription filled? You know, we all learned to count when we were in first grade. it seems like it shouldn't take that long.
Yeah, I know it. Counting by five sure gets to be a difficult time. But actually, if we just had to count those things, put them in a bottle, put a label on them, we would be just flying through that day. But part of our job as a pharmacist is we really want to gain that trust. We want to have a relationship with you coming up to our counter. We want to know what you're taking, why you're taking it, what problems you've had in the past. We really want to just develop almost like that same relationship you develop with your doctor. We want to have that pharmacist-patient trust. And, our pharmacists, we have gone through years of extensive training. And also then after that, we've also had years of real life experiences to tell you how to take your medications and things to watch out for.
Is it a good idea to call in beforehand and rather than go to the pharmacy and hand it in then? Will that help us obviously save some time? Can you do that?
Well, as of right now, doctors and nurses can call them in. But to get a prescription filled for you as a patient coming up to the pharmacy, you have to bring that paper with you. Now, coming in the near future, there will be electronic prescribing, which that doctor will actually send that prescription directly into your pharmacy. So all you have to do is go pick it up.
And the other thing is you don't, unless that person uses you as their only pharmacy, you don't necessarily know the other drugs that they're taking, right? That's why it's important to use A1 pharmacy.
That's the number one reason why it's great to stick with one pharmacy. So that way they have the whole picture of you and they know all about you.
All right.
And when you go to the pharmacy, more and more, they're always saying, would you like to speak with our pharmacist? So I really find that relationship is becoming more important too. I suppose as you're starting to layer medications on top of medications, which we'll talk about the medication therapy program in just a moment. But Bill, bless his heart, has been on hold with his question.
18 minutes.
Yes, he's been there for 18 minutes. 507-282-1234. The phone lines are full, but Bill, you get to go first. Good morning. What's your question?
Yes, sir. My urologist put me on some papaverin. It's called, and that's one of the main ingredients. It's for triple agent. And the Mayo Clinic now, that's the only place that I can receive this medicine. And because they said, most pharmacists like Weber and Judd or such in town don't have these compound, don't make the compound drugs as this. And they said now that they won't have this key ingredient until spring. And they said that they're not making it. They were going to start making it. I've heard different things from different pharmacists down there at the Mayo.
So there's a shortage?
All right, give us a straight scoop.
What's
all
up,
right.
Bill?
All right.
Well, I'm sorry, what's up, Chris?
Hey, Bill, this is Chris, down one of the pharmacists here. And what we have now is what happened with that medication was the FDA went into one of the laboratories that made one of those components of that medication, and they said, hey, we don't like your practices. Things aren't really as clean as we want. You need to take some time off and fix this. So what happened in the meantime was we went ahead and ran out of this kind of this main product they used to make this injection. And from what we had, they were going to be back up online in January. Come about 3 weeks ago, a laboratory that makes a different component of that medication voluntarily closed their facilities because of FDA investigation as well.
Wow.
So now we have gone from being ready in January to now we have to wait till they come back online.
So we really don't know when this will be available again.
Right now, we don't. And that's the worst part about this, especially about this, you know, this concoction.
Well, at least you know the story, Bill.
Thank you.
Hey, you're back. Thank you.
We have lots of tweets to go through, too, and I don't know if we'll get to them all, but you can tweet us at hashtag Mayo Radio. And the first tweet that we got was, how private are pharmacy records and who can access these, Dr. Cipolla? How private are they?
They are very private. So, good question. Really, you should be the only one who can access your pharmacy records, and you would have to sign a release for that information. Your doctor also can ask questions about, you know, prescriptions they may have prescribed for you, and they can get that information as well. But just other people in the public do not have access to that information.
507-282-1234. Good morning, Susan. Go right ahead with your question.
Well, this is a big one. I am taking a drug that was Cellcept, which was like $1,000. Well, they just recently went generic, and of course that goes down to $500. But here's the problem. I get a hold, because I research everything, because I'm very susceptible to, I think the elderly all are. So I get the ingredients from the main company that I was getting it from, and then I call the company that is a generic company, and it's in India, and one of the ingredients, and I match the ingredients to see if they're the same, because I think this is a big lie, excuse me, it's a big lie when they say the generic is the same as the brand. It just is not. The fillers are different. One of the fillers in the generic is wood pulp, and nobody can tell me what that is. But being a person that's highly allergic to things, now, just briefly, I can't take Synthroid. I mean, I can't take my thyroid. I have to take the Synthroid. And you can get an exception letter where the pharmacist has to give you the brand. But in the particular price of this drug, I'm having a problem. And another problem is the FDA has not given approval for this particular drug to be treated for the diagnosis that I have.
Susan, what's your question?
The question is, what can you do? You can't get, is there any other options out there for you? I can't find any, but maybe they might know something.
Any other options for other generics?
Yeah, that. Evidently there's eight different ones, but would you have to go through eight different ones?
All right, so what should she do, Amy?
So it sounds like you've definitely done your research. As far as the different generics go, you're exactly right. So the active ingredient does have to be the same, but the fillers can be a little different. They are, even if they're made out of the country at a manufacturing plant elsewhere, they still are regulated by the FDA and have to meet those good manufacturing practices. If you have a specific intolerance or allergy, then definitely talk with your pharmacist, and they can probably help you find maybe a manufacturer that doesn't contain that ingredient.
But the active ingredient is going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
The filler might be different. In this case, it was wood pulp. It might increase the fiber in your diet.
Yeah.
Susan, we appreciate your phone call.
No, let me just say one more thing they didn't cover was the supplements you're taking, you know, your vitamins and stuff that you're taking with your prescription. That particular area wasn't covered with the pharmacist there. That might be something they might tell. Okay?
Yes, that's coming up, actually.
Okay.
So good.
That's part of the medication management they're going to talk about. Susan, we would like to send you a cookbook, though. We've got a Christmas present for you.
Oh, wonderful.
We've got the Fit It and a Fix It and Enjoy It Healthy Cookbook that we're going to send to you.
Has it got wood pulp in it?
I don't think it does. None of the recipes I've done.
Yeah.
So hold on, and we'll get your address, and we'll send you that for Christmas.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Susan.
Good luck.
All right. And one more quick tweet before we move on to the medication management. What is the shelf life of a prescription drug, Chris?
Yeah, well, the shelf life from the point when it's actually dispensed from your pharmacy is typically 1 year. And the only reason we say that is because once that medication is exposed to air, it can start breaking it down.
Okay.
Now, the exception that I always like to point out is like nitroglycerin tablets. Nitroglycerin tablets you take for chest pain. Those will break down a lot quicker when they're exposed to air. So I tell my people that if, you know, like every three, if you're in that bottle, in and out of that, maybe every 3 months get a new bottle. Mm. If you're not, maybe every six or so.
Is the medicine cabinet in the bathroom the worst place to keep your medicine?
The medicine cabinet in the bathroom is the worst place. High heat, high moisture. It's dark, which that has it going for it, but that's otherwise that medication, the humidity and all that can break down medications as well.
And how do you know when your prescription has expired? Is there a date on there?
There's a date that we fill the prescription, and you can kind of track back from that from a year from that point. Otherwise, like if you open up your bottle and it smells kind of funny, or if there's you know, if it looks different, something like that, then by all means, you know, get rid of it or talk to your
pharmacist. So the prescriptions don't have an expiration date on them, but in general, a year, except for nitroglycerin.
That's correct.
And okay. some would. So like lotions or, you know, topical medications you might use or things you buy at the drugstore over the counter often will have a printed expiration date on them.
All right. Okay. Well, Dr. Cipolla, the reason why the two of you are sitting here today is because of the medication therapy management program. I mean, this came out and we thought we have to get this on the air and talk about it because as the population ages, everybody has more and more prescriptions in their repertoire, and that's what this program addresses. It's brilliant common sense, so tell us about it.
Yes, absolutely. So medication therapy management is when you sit down with a pharmacist and go over all of your medications. The nice thing is you meet one-on-one with the pharmacist in a private setting. So a lot of times when you're in the pharmacy, you may not feel comfortable asking all questions. The appointment lasts about an hour. You go through a full medication review. So they look at your over-the-counter items, like your vitamins and herbal supplements, anything you might take, and they look at the medications from all your doctors. So if you see multiple doctors, it's a great opportunity to kind of talk through everything.
So this is... is it at the pharmacy? There's a little office that you go and sit and meet with a pharmacist because they don't have, they've got just tons of time in their day to just sit down for an hour. But I would imagine that as you do this per patient, it becomes valuable information.
Absolutely. So it varies based on location. So some locations do have a separate room, like at a retail pharmacy. They have a private meeting room where they'll schedule appointments.
Now, how do you know if your pharmacy does this? Just call?
Yep. You can call and ask. You can also ask your insurance provider. All Medicare Part D plans are required to offer this benefit. All the plans offer it a little differently, so they might have different requirements to be eligible, but they all offer the benefit.
So there is a charge, but often the insurance will cover it.
Absolutely, yep.
All right. It's a good deal.
Medication therapy management. How do you find out pharmacies in this town, in any town, people are listening all across the country, that offer this program?
Yes, so you can look on the internet. There's great websites like the Center for Medicines and Healthy Aging at medsandaging.org. Has a pharmacist finder that can help you find pharmacists. You can also talk to your insurance plan. You can ask your local pharmacist. So if you have a good relationship, talk with that pharmacist and see.
Would you say that this is going to be the new buzzword in pharmacy in 2012 and beyond?
Yes.
Really, everybody will have this type of a management program. I can imagine for insurance companies, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Here's a great tweet. Why are there warnings about grapefruit and drugs?
Dr. Settlemyer, why can't I take grapefruit with some medication?
Well, the funny thing is grapefruit was cursed for some reason, but some of our medications, a lot of our cholesterol medications, we're on that kind of theme here this morning, other ones as well. When your body, when you take a pill, like let's say Zocor, let's use that for example. You take Zocor and you eat grapefruit. When you metabolize that medication, it runs through the same system that you metabolize that grapefruit. But since for some reason the grapefruit, though, actually will take precedence and it'll be metabolized first in your body, allowing those medications like Zocor to build up and possibly cause side effects.
So it's serious.
So it's
serious.
And
it's grapefruit.
That's the only citrus fruit is the grapefruit.
My thyroid medication doesn't like walnuts. Why I had to stop eating walnuts.
Yeah, there's stuff fighting down there in your stomach.
It's crazy. That's not fair. I love walnuts. 282-1234. If you have a question for our pharmacists, please give us a call. Rosemary, thank you for your patience. Go right ahead with your question. Hello, Rosemary?
Yes, this is Rosemary.
Go ahead.
I'd like to know, what is the difference between Lipitor and Zocor? And also, there's Crestor. Now, I switched from Lipitor to generic Zocor, and I have to take it stronger, though. Is it similar, then?
So they all have the same mechanism of action, so they work similarly in your body. But they are slightly different. So some of them have different half-lives or how long they work for. And the potency is a little bit different. So that's why the strengths, if you take, say,
100 milligrams of Zocor, you might need to take 200 milligrams of the other kind.
Yes, exactly. So they don't exactly
match
equate.
Up.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Okay. So, but they're all equivalent in terms of what they do.
Exactly. So
pretty
they're
going to
work similar.
Depending on the person, it would depend on whether Lipitor works better than Zocor. I mean, some people it would and some people it wouldn't.
And sometimes that's used when people are having side effects such as muscle aches and pains. They may switch them from one medication where they're taking a higher dose to a medication where that might be considered a little more potent, where they could take a lower dose.
Does that answer your question, Rosemary?
Yes, and also, what is Plavix? What does it do?
What does Plavix do?
Yeah, so Plavix can help help kind of keep your platelets from sticking together.
Yeah, it's a blood thinner.
Yeah,
it is an alternative to, example, for Coumadin.
Some people tell me it's not a blood thinner, it's a blood smoother.
Yep. So it helps keep your blood cells from sticking together.
From clotting. It keeps your blood from clotting. Blood thinner is kind of a misnomer. I mean, it doesn't really make your blood any thinner, but it makes it clot less. It's less likely to clot.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks
so much.
Thanks, Rosemary. Yep, bye-bye.
Dr. Sotomayor, what difference does advertising make in your business? I mean, it's been 10 years now that drug companies have been able to advertise. When they first came out, we all went, wow, we're just getting bombarded with all these advertisements for drugs. What difference did it make in the pharmacy world?
Well, the biggest thing is the more advertisement we see, the more that we see the prescriptions. We have people coming into our pharmacy saying, hey, I saw this on TV last night, saw it on Oprah,
wow,
saw it on whatever, you know. And so that really, I guess that's the biggest thing out there is, those names are just out there in front of everybody. And so that comes right back to the pharmacy and they wonder, why should I be taking that?
Before the advertisement started, nobody knew the medical names of these different drugs until the ad started. Advertising works, Shives. Yeah. Don't you forget it.
Marketing is huge.
507-282-1234. Good morning, Mark. Go right ahead with your question.
Yes. Good morning. This is kind of a thank God for insurance situation. I'm on a chemotherapy pill called Revlimid. You cannot get it in Rochester. It has to be delivered to my door from Oregon. 21 pills in a bottle, $10,000 a bottle. I'm wondering if the doctors have any comment on why is that?
The cost of the medication?
Yes.
Okay.
From the cost standpoint.
Yeah, so Revlimid is a specialty medication, and it's highly regulated. As far as the cost goes, one thing we've noticed lately is a lot of the new specialty medications that are still brand name especially are very, very high cost.
Yeah, and it's too bad, isn't it? But someday Revlimid will go generic.
Yep.
That was going to be my next question. Hopefully soon.
Yeah. No, you know, I don't know the anticipated date. But
I hadn't heard that at all.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when, but it will in the future.
All right. Thanks,
Made by
Mark.
Celgene.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
You know, we only have 10 seconds left. A couple of comments quickly about when you go to your pharmacist, things to remember. What should you do before you leave the pharmacy?
Absolutely. So take a look at your prescription bottles. Make sure it's what you're expecting. Read over your directions and ask lots of questions. We're happy to answer your questions.
And the last thing we forgot to mention is take the full course of antibiotics, because even though you're feeling better after a couple of days, the bugs aren't dead. You got to take the whole thing.
That's right.
Dr. Sotomayor and Nurse and Amy Cipolla, thanks so much for being with us. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Coming up, we'll tell you about next week's program. Stay with us. Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Next week on Medical Edge, it's a best of program.
It'll be wonderful.
Well, really, it will be. It was such a great program. Remember the one with Dr. Phil Hagen when we talked about the Mayo Clinic Book of Home Remedies?
All the old housewives' tales.
Yeah, and some of them are good, though. There's a lot of things you can do at home to actually take care of yourself. Now, Dr. Hagen and Dr. Martha Millman, who is his co-editor, say that the idea of the book came from actually contacting and talking with their patients and their colleagues, and they came up with the questions that are most asked by their visitors to the Mayo Clinic and their patients. And they came up with a simple resource. It's a 200-page book that helps everyone guide health decisions, and it offers about 120 of the most common medical conditions and health issues that you can actually treat at home.
I have referenced that book many times with young kids in the house. You know, I'm looking up splinter removal and bloody noses and all kinds of crazy stuff that the answers are in there.
Then you probably never have to go to the doctor again. You know, that's one of the advantages. There are certain things in this book that will allow you to avoid having to go to the doctor's office. All that next week. A best of the Mayo Clinic Book of Home Remedies. We hope you'll join us.
For more information on topics discussed on this program, please go to our website at radio.mayoclinic.org or visit us at mayoclinic.com, where over 3,000 physicians, scientists, and researchers from Mayo Clinic share their expertise to empower you to manage your health.
You've been listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Our senior producer is Ron Petrovich, our associate producer Lee Acey, our technical director Andy Brownell. Our theme music was written and performed by Chip Davis of Mannheim Steamroller. For Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McRae.
Thanks for listening.
Any medical information conveyed during this program is not intended as a substitute for personal medical advice, and you should not take any action before consulting a healthcare professional. For more information, please go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. Please join us each week on this station for more of the medical information you want from Mayo Clinic specialists who know.